It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running for this, the 25th day of January, 2018. This is the Horn. It's about a minute and a half past the hour, on the way to 2 minutes past the hour. And hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Let's get that out of the way early, shall we? Yes, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and lots to do, lots to talk about this evening. But we do the first things first here at the Horn. And the first thing we do is thank our subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Kay in California. And thank you ever so kindly to Asa in, doggone it, where are you, Asa? Thank you, Asa. Thank you very kindly. But those are our two subscribers for the 25th day of the month. It gets a little spare in around the 23rd, 24th, 25th, right. And if you'd like to become a subscriber, you can always go and make that choice right now until we get the whole domain name thing sorted out. And God knows we're trying. You can use the PayPal interface at headon.live, headon.live, headon.live. That's also where one of the two stream accesses is, and I'm told that all the streams are up and running as they should be, and that's a magnificent, wonderful, wonderful thing. Thanks very kindly to our buddy Glenn in New York. I got a note from Glenn earlier saying, Mom and I went to the casino and hit a little bit, so we thought we'd share. And so that takes our fundraising goal down to $140 so that we can finally start having fundraising-free radio till the end of January, which should have started yesterday, but didn't because we're not quite there. There's a challenge on the table this evening. I should mention that right off the top, and probably mention it a couple of times later on in the evening. Our buddy Chris in Germany is a little bit dismayed at the inability to finish off fundraising so we can do the fundraising free radio. And so it informed me to please put a $200 challenge on the table this evening so that we can indeed finish off the last of the fundraising and so that the remainder of January can be fundraising free. That would be Friday on the front porch and More in Monday, Titanic Tuesday, and next prayer meeting Wednesday. This is a way of doing that. There's $200 on the table if it is met. Now, there's $140 remaining in fundraising for the evening, or for the month, rather, and then the subscriptions cover the rest of the month. So, there it stands. Hopefully people will respond and, knock that thing out. And, well, look, next week's my birthday. The best birthday gift I could have, and no, I'm not talking about the Gulfstream 5 or anything, is just to be able to do this program without fundraising for a few days. So if we can knock that thing out, we will take my birthday as read, and I'll be here, and we'll celebrate it together. Okay? All right? So there we go. That's where it all stands. And of course, like I said, the PayPal interface is over at headon.live. Just scroll the page, and you'll see it right there in the middle of the page, big as life. Just click on it, and away you'll go. If you'd like to be a part of the subscription team, but you hate PayPal, there's always Patreon. Patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. And we're still looking to find one entire night's worth of broadcasting via our Patreon subscribers. We're very close, I must add. But thank you. Thank you just the same. Okay, then we're halfway there. Thank you, Charlene in Rhode Island. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. That gets us halfway done with Chris's challenge. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you so very, very much. So that's all the housekeeping and stuff for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. But it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we reserve those days for the sort of moments. Because there are always some, but sometimes there are giggles too. There are, and we will get to those in short order. I'm feeling pretty perky because just a little bit ago, the hardworking peripatetic periodontic scientists from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter walked into the studio and handed me a bottle, and I said, "Okay, what is this?" And they informed me that it was Super Zeta Zucchini. Yes. Right now, only. From Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Well, here's how it happened. The hardworking periodontic peripatetic scientists of Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter went walking up a holler not too awfully far from Busted Knuckle the other day. There's a holler. It's just up from Busted Knuckle. And Mrs. Ferguson raises zucchini there. Right. And what they discovered was a particular strain of zucchini there that contains the Super Zeta micromolecule. Mm-hmm. It's a tiny molecule, but it does big things. And so this evening, for a limited time and in a limited supply, the Super Zeta Zucchini capsule from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. You know, I've never cared much for zucchini, but thanks to Super Zeta Zucchini, I can get all the zucchini goodness I need. And, well, if you've ever seen a zucchini, fellas, you know what that zeta molecule does. Yes, but it's also absolutely beneficial to all genders and non-genders and intergenders and everybody from Dan to Bathsheba. Earth, you're asking all Ferg of them. Periapostolic pharmacists walked in the studio. Yes, right. Periapostolic. That's good. And so with the discovery of the new Super Zeta molecule, well, we've got it and no one else has it. So act now. Supplies are limited. And if you order up the 3-month supply, well, you know the drill. We'll send you a 3-month supply of Super Zeta Zucchini nutritional supplements from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. And by golly, we'll also send you, for the low, low 3-month supply price of only $104.19, we'll send you a bundle of test strips that are specifically designed to identify the Super Zeta micromolecule so that you can know what we know here, that the Super Zeta micromolecule, as well as the Super Zeta Zucchini capsule, is absolutely nutritionally worthless. Yes, that's why we're so proud of our proprietary blend of Super Zeta Zucchini. It's gluten-free, vegan, free-range, cage-free, cruelty-free, and is completely and utterly a bullshit nutritional supplement. Yes. So order now. It won't last. Operators aren't standing by. This is not a free call. Shipping and handling is brutal, I promise you. But you want these. You really, really want these, especially if you're some ignorant, gullible, right-wing lurker hanging around the periphery of this here little radio program. Brother Deacon Asa asking, is Super Zeta Zucchini endorsed by a celebrity by any chance? Say a Welsh actress, perhaps? If you need it to be, you may rest assured that it is. Super Zeta Zucchini, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. And now, of course, it is time for something I genuinely enjoy each and every day. It's like having your memory tickled. That's right. It's time for This Day in Horn History. For today's edition of This Day in Horn History, we're dialing Mr. Peabody's Wayback Machine 6 years into the past, all the way back to January the 25th, 2012. Bob opens this prayer meeting Wednesday program, letting the congregation know that he thought he had jars full of strychnine to bring to the prayer meeting for speaking in tongues and whatnot. But in fact, they turned out to be moonshine. Bob invites members of the congregation to help themselves to a swig of the moonshine, explaining it was made from raisins and therefore it's halfway to sacrament anyway. See how that works? First up in the prayer meeting lineup is Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, whom Bob says is an expert on marriage because he's been through it so many times. Dr. Newt is on the Christian Broadcasting Network, CBN, conducting an interview in the lead-up to the 2012 Republican primaries. In response to the question why he appeals to evangelical voters, Dr. Leroy claims it's because he understands that there's a full-on war on religion, and as president, he's going to call out the judiciary, forcing them to rule in accordance with biblical law. Never mind that he was giving it to House Legislative Aide Callista on the side while he was still married to Marianne, Bob then observes. The next contender in this particular prayer meeting Wednesday's lineup is perhaps the most entertaining of any prayer meeting Wednesday in Horn history to date. This story even carries an extraordinary warning from Bob. Before we jump into this next one, let me warn you, this is another installment in Bob's assault on the dinner hour, so consider yourselves warned. Okay, consider yourselves warned. It's a story about foaming at the mouth anti-gay Bishop Patrick Wooden from Upper Room Church of Gospel Ministries of North Carolina. In an interview with Peter LaBarbera, Bishop Wooden is making the case that gay men insert animals and baseball bats up their sphincter muscles. Bishop Wooden goes into graphic detail. I know of a gay man who passed away where what used to be his anus had become a gaping hole, and he died wearing a diaper. Later on in the interview, Bishop Wooden describes a man who had to receive emergency surgery to pull cellophane out of his anus, during which the phone started ringing. I wonder what he had shoved up his handy, Bob observes. Did I really? This, of course, engenders numerous comments flooding in from Bob's audience, some of whom are disgusted and claim dinner has been permanently ruined for them. In a move that may indicate Bob was laying out the foundations for Horn Nutraceuticals all the way back in 2012, Bob suggests maybe we can patent this method for weight loss. Just sit through a few segments of gut-wrenching evangelical nasty talk on the Horn and lose up to 40 pounds a week, Bob says. Longtime friend of the program, Jim, calls up with a solution for Bishop Wooden's sick fascination with anal sex. Maybe we ought to pick up a tub of Vaseline at his closest pharmacy, grease up a fire hydrant real good, and set his anus on it. Jesus! We have had a lot of fun on this program over the years, haven't we? And that's a look 6 years into the past, all the way back to January 25th, 2012, for This Day in Horn History. Because history is always valuable. So we're at 15 minutes past the hour, and now we can move on into the present, assuming that we really, really want to do that. And it being Thorn in the Side Thursday, well, gosh darn it. I like to share those little moments of wonderful humor. And this is one of them. I mean, let's start out with a laugh so that we'll at least have a good airflow going when the weeping and the wailing and the tragedy sets in. You know, of course, that the president of the new 90 states of Merca, along with a whole passel of his White House staff, you know, except for melanoma and everything, done went over to Davos. I learned that this morning. It's not Davos. That's how the hillbillies pronounce it. It's Davos. You just like Betsy DeVos. That's how they pronounce the Swiss pronunciation. That's what it is. But they're over there. They're all over there having a high old global economic summit and good time. And they're having so much fun, they decided they'd spend some of your money to have a bunch of swells over to dinner so that they could watch the Dirty Donnie make forks look really big because they look like salad tongs in his tiny, tiny, itsy-bitsy little toddler Keebler elfish hands. Okay. So they're having dinner on us, you know, lark's vomit canapes and wolf nipple chips and hummingbird tongue stuff, right? Yeah. So naturally they put out a list, and I don't know why this tickled me like it did, but it did. They put out a list of the folks who, thank you, Carol Baker, pointing out, you know, I needed to stop talking to the cult of Trump. This is a nice respite. Thank you, Carol. And, that's what this is kind of here for. And even when we're talking about him, we can have a little giggle, and this is giggle worthy. But I love that, you know, I love this day in Horn history and talking about our new supplements and everything just because it reminds us of a Trumpless, a more innocent America, a Trumpless America when he was just a nasty little grifter over on the electric TV box instead of a Russian tool, and I do mean tool, very small tool, occupying the Oval Office and trying to ruin what's left of this once great nation. So there was an awkward there was an awkward photo op earlier with Theresa May, and after that there was an awkward photo op with noted Middle Eastern psychopath Bibi Netanyahu, and after that the big dinner with the swells. And you may recall that there is a passage. Exactly, Stephen, New York. Those halcyon days. They lots of fancy highfalutin corporate so-and-sos and mucky mucks coming into dinner. But you may recall last week or so? Yep. Homeland Security Director Kirstjen Nielsen showed up in the Senate to tell them that she had no idea whether or not there were white people in Norway. You know, that just, she got a Scandinavian name and can't tell if any of the white people in Norway. It's just a gift that that's just a gift that keeps on giving. Kirsten Nielsen, the woman who doesn't know if Norway is a majority white nation. You can't make this stuff up. Well, she gets to go, but then they promulgate the dinner list and misspell her name. I guess that was the Swiss spelling. But the best part of it all, and the buried lead of it, is what they did to an executive from Volvo. Which, of course, Dimwit Donnie thinks is a part of female anatomy that he is prone to grabbing from time to time. Yeah, there were, there were a bunch of dignitaries there. You know, Casper Rorsted from Adidas was there, and Joe Kaiser of Siemens from Germany was there. Not those kind of Siemens, you perverts. Heinrich Heisinger of Tyson Krupp, the folks who made the really, really big once upon a time. Not now, they're nice Germans now. But once upon a time, they made really, really huge artillery pieces and things that come in handy for running death camps. Mark Schneider was there from Nestle, who, of course, would very much like to own all the water on planet Earth. Carlos Brito was there from Anheuser-Busch InBev. Yeah, isn't it interesting how his name's not Bush? But along came a fella in attendance from Volvo. Yes, the car company. And thanks to the geniuses in the Trump administration, well, gosh darn it, they transformed him into a Martian. No, really, they did. They transformed him into a Martian. In fact, he is Martian Lundstedt. Martian Lundstedt. He wasn't before he went to dinner, but now he's a Martian, and we don't know if he'll be able to get a... I guess he had to visit Trump in Switzerland because he'd never get a green card because... I mean, if a Martian's not an alien, who is? These people. but I did. When I first saw the story, I giggled. I giggled merrily. That's sort of the buried lead. Trump administration invites Martian to dinner. But back to Kirsten Nielsen. Kind of makes you wonder... She's the only woman in the delegation. And then, of course, we had the reference from Fire and Fury last night and what Michael Wolff said to Bill Maher recently, that if you read between the lines, it's clear that Geezer Disgustus is having an affair inside the White House. I know. It's just like that thing from this day in Horn history with the ugh. Oh, wait a minute. We got a little cowbell going out to Hoghead for the following. Martian, Martian, Martian. Yes. Melanoma didn't make the trip, but Kirsten Nielsen did. They screwed up her last name. And on top of it all, there were no women from the European business world there. Not one. Zero, zilch, zip, nada, niente. Mm-hmm. And the one woman who was in attendance was not allowed to say so much as hello. We're making real progress course, previously in the day, and I got a note from Ron in Raleigh about this. Subject line, I could drop a log. While hobnobbing with the money to lead in Davos, the carrot-topped clown said that the Palestinian leadership disrespected our great vice president by not having a sit-down with him. He then threatened to cut off funds to support Palestine. I guess he doesn't call what he did when he spat on their shoes when he called for moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem disrespectful. He also said that they should re-enter the peace process. The U.S. has never been an honest broker in the Arab-Israeli conflict, even less so now. There is no hope for a two-state solution since Israel has carved up the West Bank into a bunch of Bantustans crisscrossed by Israeli-only roads, walls, and settlements. We need to stop bullshitting ourselves, says Ron, about our intentions in the Middle East. All we care about is allowing Israel to do whatever they like. Meanwhile, in big news from the archaeology and anthropology front, a new article has been published. The oldest human skeletal remains outside of Africa have been discovered in a cave in Israel. The Israeli government immediately sent in bulldozers to level the ground where the cave was, have started building a settlement there, and have declared that whoever that was, they were not there first, and God gave them that land, damn it. Right. Thorns in the side. And just a couple of hit and misses things to sort of be aware of. And this really was a thorn in my side. Saw it this morning. Again. And yes, I know. They're only commercials. But they're only commercials the same way that murals of or the portraits, the Rembrandt portraits of the people of his day in the Netherlands were only paintings. Both serve as sort of depictions of the time. They're, and in the case of the commercial, snapshots. And in particular, the one that just grabbed me, because I don't know, I you wake up, you get your first cup of decaf in you, and then you turn on that little program over on MSNBC, and that set you to being ready to scream for a while. And then the commercial breaks come along. Oh, did they? Carol Baker pointing out. Someone once parked their Volvo on my Verganda, then I made them move it because it was pulling the hair down there. Oh, we're off and running with the cowbell this evening. Just pulling the... Whew! Yeah. But this particular commercial was for, I mean, and Bob, you know, you probably need therapy because you're getting wrought at ads for windshield wipers. But apparently there's a big marketing push on to sell these things, and this is probably as good a time as any for it. Unpaid placement. And, you know, it's not even necessarily a good mention. I don't know that I would ever buy anything from them. That windshield wiper blades from Rain-X. And I don't know what kind of ungodly toxic chemicals are in Rain-X, but we've used it on our windshields for years because it really does help as far as driving in the rain is concerned. But they got windshield wiper blades now that are molecularly imbued with Rain-X or something. And you know what? If they'd said it, they were molecularly imbued with, then maybe they do, and that's okay. But the part that crawled, it got right up under my skin, was where it was the voiceover script, in which it was stated that Rain-X magically makes rain disappear from your windshield. Really? Magically, the rain disappears. The cloud cover could stretch for miles, but there's a little hole in the cloud cover, kind of like the eye of a hurricane or something, that just opens up over your car because you've got Rain-X windshield wipers and the rain magically disappears. Poof. Is there smoke involved? I don't know. Poof. Yeah. Rain-X. Magically. The fact of the matter is, that compound, and somebody from the scientific community can probably fill me in on what exactly it is and how many millions of people die each year because of what's necessary to produce it, or how many Superfund sites have been created by it, or what have you. Yes, Anatole in the chat room pointing out, it's wizardry! But it's science. And you know what? Once upon a time, there were... And okay, it went off the deep end on the other end of the pendulum. I remember cigarette ads. Oh, what was it? Territon has charcoal filters for... Right. Scientifically proven to reduce tar and nicotine, making a cooler, better, more flavorful smoke. It's a cigarette. But this idea that something that's obviously the product of a whole lot of scientific laboratory work and engineering work, chemistry which explicitly denies the idea of magic. But the thing is, you can't get anywhere. You can't get anywhere. Pitching science to the American people anymore. Well, that's true. There we go. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out it's no different than Super Zeta Zucchini, which magically makes your willy grow. See how it works? Absolutely. But the idea, and I think what bugged me about it is I'd seen that commercial 50 times. And for some reason or another, I was just paying attention and I heard, magically makes the rain disappear. And all of a sudden, my busy little brain is filled, you know, there's Glenda with the wand hovering over my windshield. Are you a good raindrop or a bad raindrop? You'd better watch out, or someone will drop a house on your windshield. Magic. Oh, carrots are divine. You get a dozen for a dime. It's magic. I see their orange skins, and I hear violins. It's magic. Magic. Because the American people respond not to science, but to magic. It kind of lets you know that we're screwed. badly. And you sit there and you say, wait a minute, we landed people on the moon. Was that magic too? And it's hard to argue that a whole bunch of America wouldn't say, why, yes, as a matter of fact, it was. At least the ones that don't say, went to the moon. We all know that was fake. They did it with some of that brain-eating Wi-Fi. That's how they did that. Magic. Or then there's the... There's the Apple commercial that's out now that shows the little kid of somewhat indeterminate gender. I take it that she's a little girl, or a, you know, tweener, whatever. And she rides all over town on her bicycle and does stuff with her iPad Pro. And, you know, she sends a text message of a picture of, like, something. And there's a friend of hers who's got a cast on his arm, and she goes and sits at the little cafe or something, and then she rides her bicycle some more, and she's got a helmet on, all proper like, and so she gets home and she's sitting in the yard, and she's got her iPad open, and her neighbor, a woman of color, says to her, hi, you know, real cheerful, not get off my lawn or anything. Hey, what are you doing on your computer? Because the kid's laying in the grass with the iPad. And the little kid looks up at her and just as snarky as shit says, what's a computer? Like the kid doesn't know that an iPad's a computer. And of course, it, you know, it wasn't some crotchety old white dude walking out going, hey, what are you doing on your abacus computational device box there? You're different. What are you doing with that difference engine there, child? No, just a nice black lady leaning over the fence and she's, what are you doing on your computer? What's a computer? Yeah, there ought to be, and that's where the commercial ends, and you'd almost think that that there should be a second line after that. Oh, you are a special one, aren't you? Thorns. Oh, but I mentioned that melanoma did not go to Switzerland with hubby to celebrate their 13th wedding anniversary. Happy couple. What do you get for the 13th anniversary? Is that penicillin? So instead, today, with Donald jetting off on our dime again to Switzerland, to the World Economic Forum, in what can only be taken as a highly symbolic move, melanoma decided that with Tangerine Tiberius out of the White House, she might slip over to the Holocaust Museum. I highly recommend it. Ah, there we go. There's the answer. Carol Baker answering, what do you get for your 13th anniversary? A divorce. An attorney. Maybe that's what the trip to the Holocaust Museum was for. It was all cover. Maybe there was a secret meeting inside the Holocaust Museum because, you know, lawyers. But really, today, melanoma went over to the Holocaust Museum there in Washington, D.C., and then, of course, issued a statement saying, "My thoughts and prayers are with the people whose lives and families were broken by the horrors of the Holocaust. My heart is with you, and we remember." Look, I don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole on this. Because the next thing you know, we're playing Pink Floyd records backwards and turn me on Dead Man and Revolution Number 9 and all of it and Led Zeppelin. And I don't even have a turntable. She went on to say, "The visit was a powerful and moving tour that honors the millions of innocent lives lost and educates us on the tragedies and effects of the Holocaust. That museum is... It will move you. It will change you. If you go through the Holocaust Museum and you come out the other end of it unmoved, you're either soulless or a Nazi." But it was that. It was that line. It was those two words from that sentence. "My heart is with you, and we remember." You know, human beings are not always, and you know, this is the stuff that Jung and Freud and subsequent researchers have delved into. Human beings are not always aware of just exactly why they do things. We're certainly not aware of what our subconscious is up to. That's why it's our subconscious. God almighty, I've mentioned before, I go to sleep at night and it's like going to the movies. I cannot explain to you I don't know why I went to sleep last night and, I kid you not, dreamt in tremendous detail of the Battle of Tippecanoe. I mean, I hadn't run across any John Tyler references. We weren't. For God's sakes, the movie we watched last night, Agnes and I, was Goodbye, Christopher Robin. There is nothing about the Battle of Tippecanoe in that. No. But somewhere in the far reaches of my very busy little defragging mind, I had a dream about the Battle of Tippecanoe. Woke up this morning, Agnes looks at me and said, "What'd you dream about?" I said, "Tippecanoe, you?" But I don't know why our brains do what they do, and I suspect maybe melanoma doesn't either, or maybe she does. But with the recent revelation of the Stormy Daniels thing, and the fact that it went on for months and months and months, just a couple of short years after she and the Caratine Caligula had been married. She turns and then she goes to the minute he's out of town, she heads for the Holocaust Museum and issues a statement saying, "We remember." That is an entirely appropriate statement to make upon having visited the Holocaust Museum, but noting that, but in light of the fact that she's just been left behind for a European trip in which she, Melanoma, would have been fluent in practically every language spoken there. And Nectarine Nero could have relied on her for translation. It's more than a little weird. In the Associated Press story, it says, "Mrs. Trump was originally scheduled to accompany her husband to Davos for the World Economic Forum, but Tuesday her chief of staff said Mrs. Trump would not make the trip to the summit, citing unspecified scheduling and logistical issues." It'll be a cold day in hell when I go anywhere else with you, you philandering son of a bitch. You know, I think you can describe that as unspecified scheduling and logistical issues. And, meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa, agreeing with Sister Carol Baker, says, "Of course, everyone knows you go to the Holocaust Museum to find the best Jew, you got to say it like that, Jew lawyers. Just ask Kayla Moore. We've got a Jew lawyer." Do you have any idea how difficult it is to stretch J-E-W into two complete, separate, and distinct syllables? Not for the faint of heart. Saturday is International Holocaust Remembrance Day. That's why Mrs. Trump said that she visited the museum. And interestingly, she specifically visited the exhibits there that documented the rise of the Nazi Party in Germany. Well, that's just symbolic as hell, isn't it? Especially given the fact that, well, her husband has a penchant for Nazis. Yeah. Meanwhile, Steve in New York, subject line, wedding anniversary, says, "I wouldn't be surprised if he told her not to go because it was the 13th and that's unlucky. The fact that she probably hates him works too." Meanwhile, Ron and Raleigh pointing out, didn't the Slovenians side with the Nazis? She needs to go to the African American Museum, a bridge too far, perhaps. Well, it's not too far away. Maybe she can, you know what? I bet she's saving that trip, Ron. She'll go to the African American History Museum, probably on the anniversary of the assassination of Dr. King, because it will be 50 years this April. Wonder where Donald Trump will be playing golf, don't you? Meanwhile, Steve in New York notes, "There's a very logical reason why you had that dream. You're weird." I thought we always just took that as red. Yes. Meanwhile, and once again, file this under, there's never any telling what it is that will grab the imagination of the Horn Family Community Congregation. The second email on my dream, Randy in PA, "You dreamt of Tippecanoe because the incompetent President Harrison was like Trump and died 30 days after taking office." We can work with that. Jim noting the Holocaust Museum is moving. Sit in the cattle car and hold up one of the stones. Mm-hmm. Moving indeed. Meanwhile, going back to something we talked about yesterday, David writes in, "Idea of a name for the Horns cryptocurrency. Ironically, name it Bitchcoin." That would have to be ironic indeed. Meanwhile, Barbecue Todd, subject line, Melania, "Don't be disparaging the marriagin'. Two hoes in one." You just have to wonder what he's going to... what kind of shenanigans he's going to be up to over there. It won't be good. We'll wind up embarrassed. There's no getting around it.
So, some other thorn in the side kind of news. It's not prayer meeting Wednesday, and we all know that the evangelical religion industry are a bunch of damnable frauds. But still, I think it's a mark of at least the ongoing relative health of my humanity that I can still be shocked and disgusted. Story comes out of Arizona. It's the story of Scott Daniel Warren. You know, there's that passage, what is it, Matthew 25, where it talks about clothing the naked and housing the homeless and feeding the hungry and visiting those who are sick and in prison. And by way of teaching a lesson somewhere at the end of it all, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, says, you know, if you've done it unto the least of these, my brothers, you've also done it unto me. Meaning that he wants people to treat those in most dire need as though they were someone worthy of respect, as being imbued with simple human dignity. And so we come to the story of Scott Daniel Warren. Scott Daniel Warren is an instructor at Arizona State University. He teaches a class in environmental studies. In addition, he has a life outside the classroom. And as part of that life outside the classroom, he became part of an organization, a group, a local group, called No More Deaths. Among the work that No More Deaths has done is to document Border Patrol agents kicking over water bottles that had been left in the arid vastness of the desert for people for whom those bottles of water might have defined the continuation of life itself. Well, a few hours after No More Deaths released videos of the Border Patrol agents kicking over those bottles of life-giving, life-saving water, the Border Patrol then came along and arrested Scott Daniel Warren. They charged him with the federal offense of harboring illegal immigrants. He was arrested Wednesday after Border Patrol agents surveilled a building in Ajo, A-J-O, Arizona, where two immigrants were provided. And let's just check this out alongside Matthew 25, because remember, Tony Perkins and Franklin Graham and all of those multi-multi-million-bajillionaire servants of Christ have said that they support Donald Trump even though he's done sinful things. They support him because he has the right people around him. One presumes that would be the people giving direction to, say, the Border Patrol to kick over supplies of water. Let's check in, though, with what it is that Mr. Warren is accused of doing. They busted him after they surveilled him and two immigrants going into a facility that the Border Patrol agents referred to as the barn. The barn. Maybe it sounds more terrifying if we turn on the reverb. The barn. Yes, it does. Wherein the two immigrants were provided with, again, check this alongside the list from Matthew 25. I was hungry and ye fed me. I was naked and ye clothed me. I was homeless and ye gave me shelter. The two immigrants were provided with food, water, beds, and clean clothes. And for that, Scott Daniel Warren faces the full weight, might, majesty, and power of the federal government's prosecutorial powers. You know, I can't help but recall that the Nectarine Nero, not too long back, pardoned a famous Arizonan, Joe R. Piehole. Yes, he did. For violating a federal judge's order and being held in contempt. It was particularly humorous when Joe R. Piehole was queried about it and said, "I didn't do nothing wrong." And whoever it was that was interviewing said, "Well, sheriff, when you accept a presidential pardon, it is implicit with that presidential pardon that you admit your guilt. When did you admit your guilt in order to receive the pardon?" "I never did, and I ain't no lawyer, and I don't know nothing about no lawyer and stuff, and all your mammon and Miss May Ellerin, it don't come to nothing. It don't come to nothing." But still, he was trapped in his own guilt. Meanwhile, Arizona State University ran to the microphones to say, "Mr. Warren was not acting in his capacity as an ASU employee at the time of the alleged incident, and we have no reason to believe it will impact his ability to fulfill his current duty with the university." Meanwhile, No More Deaths volunteer Caitlin Dagan said she thinks it sure does look suspicious that Mr. Warren, Professor Warren, got charged so close to the same time as No More Deaths released the video of these merciful, compassionate Border Patrol agents, paid with your money, by the way, destroying water supplies for people who might very well be dying of thirst. Hoo-wee, ain't we a great country, Merca? The greatest country in the history of the world on earth, in the universe, now, today, forever, under God, amen. Yes, we are. Earth are pointing out, no, the right people around Trump are Susie and Billy and Ahmed Spirakeet. Ironically, Ahmed is the source of Trump's anti-Muslim bent. Well, that's because he's a Spirakeet and he's nuts. But that's America. The place where we pay Border Patrol agents to try to make sure that people dying of thirst in the fucking desert go ahead and die of thirst in the fucking desert. Well, I tell you, it just makes you want to cue up the Lee Greenwood, doesn't it? "If tomorrow I was in the desert with my children and my wife, I'd want a Border Patrol agent there to kick over the water that might save their life. Thank God for America, where I can die of thirst all free." But see, he's a Merkin. A good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-to-mentalist, ammo-sexual, Christian Border Patrol agent would give Lee Greenwood a bottle of water, just not one of them to them them Mexican rapists with calves the size of cantaloupes. All right. Like I said, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. John, meanwhile, with a note, subject line, weird shit, says, I still haven't wrapped my mind around the part of Michael Wolff's book that describes Trump's changing the bedchambers and prohibiting anyone, changing the locks of the bedchambers and prohibiting anyone but Ivanka to enter. Now, that one, well, when you couple that one with the fact that when he was crawling out of, Stormy was leaping out of bed or whatever, and he said, you remind me of my little girl. Yeah, I know. Meanwhile, Scott and Punky with a note, organically imbued my ass, Bob. See, this is why I've been saying for years that political ads should be subjected to the same rigors of proof that commercials for consumer products are. If, under the guise of free political speech, campaign ads remain exempt from the requirement to only be allowed to employ verifiable claims and product promises, as other products in the marketplace are, government and society will continue to suffer the deterioration we're experiencing. Under the kind of reasonable guidelines for political commercials I've described, someone like Trump would not be able to even enjoy the implication that he's organically imbued with any traits that even remotely resemble governing or leadership qualities. Yeah, but we're not free if the Koch brothers can't run as many filthy, lying, disingenuous ads as they feel the need to run. And so at 2 minutes past the hour, that's the filibobster for this evening. If you've got something on your mind, that's cool. You can call the program 304-574-8178 or from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Or for that matter, I've got a ton of filibobster material here. Then I can just keep it going. It's fine by me, either way. Okie doke. In the meantime, we are halfway. Well, we're over halfway. Thank you very kindly to John. Thank you, John. $90 away from meeting Chris in Germany's challenge, and finally finishing off the active fundraising part of the month. And that means Friday on the front porch, More in Monday, Titanic Tuesday, and prayer meeting Wednesday. We'll all be fundraising free if we can just raise $90 more. So, hallelujah, glory, and thank you very kindly for helping make that happen. In the meantime, we'll take a little break. It being a Thursday, that means we have the Green News Report, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, coming right up. And me, well, I'm just little old Bob Kincaid, and I do love this time that we get to spend together. I'm not going anywhere, but still, when you do radio, you say, we'll be back.
Believe.
It's Thursday, January 25, 2018.
We have really reached a point of no return.
Cape Town, South Africa is about to become the first major city to run out of water.
We've decided to make France a model in the fight against climate change.
At Davos, U.S. promotes oil and gas, while France pushes clean energy innovation. Trump's big infrastructure proposal will bypass major environmental laws. Plus, California City becomes the ninth to sue the fossil fuel industry for climate damages.
Go California! All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We are now the number one oil and gas producing nation on the face of the earth.
Yep. Thanks, Obama. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, Cape Town is about to run completely out of water?
That's correct. Cape Town, South Africa is on the verge of completely running out of water due to an unrelenting extended drought, the worst in more than a century. Cape Town city officials say water rationing has not reduced demand enough. So this week, Cape Town Mayor Patricia de Lille moved up day zero. That's the date when water is expected to run out, to April 12th.
We have really reached a point of no return. We can no longer ask people to stop wasting water. We now have to force them to stop wasting water.
When the water runs out, officials say they will deploy the police and the military to protect water distribution points for 4 million residents.
Is this a picture of what we might be seeing elsewhere in the world in the coming years?
Well, that is projected to happen with climate change. The World Resources Institute warned in its water risk report this week that 33 countries will face extremely high water stress by 2040, primarily located in the volatile Middle East. And the drought across South Africa is due in part to climate change that has altered weather patterns, according to another new study in the journal Nature Climate Change. Even if the world succeeds in meeting the internationally agreed upon target of limiting global warming to no more than 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, they still project that more than a quarter of the planet's land surface will become significantly drier overall.
You're always nothing but good cheer, Des.
Well, here's some more not good cheer. Here in the U.S., E&E News reports that the Trump administration plans to accelerate its deregulation push in its upcoming infrastructure proposal. It'll be framed as saving private developers time and money, but the administration will propose to speed up the permitting process for large infrastructure projects by eliminating major environmental regulation requirements like the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Endangered Species Act, and the National Environmental Policy Act.
Those pesky laws again.
A new Harvard study has found deep inequality in Americans' exposure to deadly air pollution. The researchers analyzed Medicare and Medicaid recipients and found that seniors on Medicare and low-income residents who qualify for Medicaid in the United States bear the brunt, with a much higher risk of premature death due to air pollution, particularly in minority communities.
And if this is based on Medicaid and Medicare numbers, I guess that means it's costing taxpayers more money in those areas.
Indeed it is. And as David Roberts of Vox notes, quote, "Rolling back air quality regulations does not reduce costs. It merely shifts the costs from industrialists to vulnerable populations."
Of course it does.
U.S. Energy Secretary Rick Perry was at the World Economic Forum this week, the annual gathering of world leaders in Davos, Switzerland. He was there to push advanced oil and gas drilling technology and U.S. fossil fuel exports.
The United States is not just exporting energy, we're exporting freedom.
Jesus, really?
Yes, really. In contrast, French President Emmanuel Macron promoted his nation's transition to clean energy and its innovations in renewable energy technology as the key to global competitiveness.
We've decided to make France a model in the fight against climate change. And that's, for me, a huge advantage in terms of attractiveness and competitiveness. Why? Because you can create a lot of jobs in such a strategy.
Wow, France has realized that fighting for the environment is a great way to create jobs. Go figure.
Finally, Richmond, California this week became the 9th U.S. city to sue the fossil fuel industry for damages caused by climate change, alleging that the fossil fuel companies knew their product would cause dangerous global warming, misled the public about it for decades, and therefore should be liable for billions of dollars in damages and repairs to its coastal infrastructure from rising sea levels along its 32 miles of shoreline.
And Richmond should know how dangerous fossil fuels are. Isn't that where they had that huge Chevron refinery explosion just a few years ago?
It is indeed.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Well, that'll be stuck in my head for the rest of the night. 12 minutes after the hour on the 25th day of January, 2018. This is the Horn, and we've got $90 to go to meet Chris's challenge, and that'll end fundraising for January, and we'll have fundraising-free radio for the rest of the remaining four program days of the month. I'd hoped it would be more than this, but it just didn't work out that way. So I tried to sort of ease us into the craziness and the misery with a little lightheartedness and a little tomfoolery and, okay, bobfoolery, I guess. But here we go. Again, from the Department of Attention Must Be Paid. A couple of nights ago, when I mentioned the story of the shooting at Marshall County High School in Kentucky, and I'm disinclined to let this story go until the next one comes along. A nation that was not hopelessly dysfunctional to the point of damn near catatonia wouldn't let go of it either. There's not one of these things that is acceptable, and there's not one of them that wasn't preventable. And I mentioned that the county attorney quote a couple of nights ago, where he said that the eeriness of walking into the crime scene, the commons area of that high school in that little county in Kentucky, and seeing the backpacks scattered all over and phones laying on the floor just ringing with no one there to pick them up, was one of the most disturbing things he'd ever been part of. Well, for some reason or another, the details just keep coming out about this one, and again from the Human Empathy Department. And understand when I provide you the details of the story, let me make clear that I know that no member of the National Rifle Association, America's wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization, would be moved by this, and neither would the Russians who funneled money to the Trump campaign through the National Rifle Association, America's wealthiest and most powerful domestic terror organization. They wouldn't be moved by it either. But I am. I shared the story with Agnes, and well, she did what Agnes does with these stories, and I probably ought not, you know, I just shouldn't. But when she says things like, why do you look like that? You know, after 25 years, I know better than to try to hide it. And so I just go ahead and share the damn story. And it could be set up like some sort of real-world Twilight Zone with, you know, submitted for your approval. No. No, it is a simple act of human empathy. It is a simple, and for parents of children, it's a simple matter of just knowing the particulars of what we've all been through in the process of being parents. And if you're a parent, you worry about things like this. You cannot help it. And so, WKRN TV reached out to the mother of one of the two children who were slaughtered thanks to this country's inability to come to grips with its own fetishization of firearms. WKRN-TV spoke to Secret Holt. She's the mother of Bailey Nicole Holt. And Bailey Nicole Holt, aged 15, was murdered this week by another 15-year-old with whom she went to high school. He killed a 15-year-old boy, too, just to review. He shot 12 others. 3 or 4 of them remain critically injured. And in treatment. But what stopped me was this story from WKRN. They interviewed Secret Holt. They asked her about her daughter. She said she was a perfect, sweet soul. She said what has happened is, and this is a quote, unbearable for our family. And then she described a scenario that sent chills through me. She said that as it all began, her daughter Bailey called her along the way. They've tried to tell Bailey's story because Bailey's not here to tell her story anymore, because of people like Wayne LaPierre and the National Rifle Association, America's wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization that won't permit us to have any sort of common-sense gun laws that will stop 15-year-olds from going to school with, daddy's shooting iron or whatever, however the hell he got hold of it. It was a law. Yeah, it was a legal weapon. It only becomes illegal when it is illegally used. And the problem with that is in order for you to find out it's illegal, it has to be illegally used. And by the time it's used, quite often the damage is done to 13, 14, 15 young people. Secret Holt told about how Bailey already knew exactly what she wanted to do with her life. At 15, she had it all plotted out. At 15, Bailey Nicole Holt loved babies. At 15, Bailey Nicole Holt was taking classes and working toward the idea that she would go to college and she would get her degree and that she wanted to be a labor and delivery nurse. She wanted to imbue her life with meaning by helping other little lives into the world. She was cheated of that opportunity, despite the fact that there are in excess of 80% of the American people who want legislation, who want laws that will help prevent these kinds of things from happening. She was cheated of that by people like Paul Ryan and her own goddamned, godforsaken senators, Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. She was cheated of the opportunity to help little lives come into the world by Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, America's booger-eaten, anointed future king of America. By Steve Cantaloupe's King and Louis Asparagus Gohmert. By Marsha Gedness Blackburn, who lives, you know, scarcely 100 miles away from her. She was cheated by the Republican Party and by Quisling Democrats who are so terrified of the NRA that they dare not speak up for the Brittany Nicole Holtz of the world. She was cheated. But she did what scared children do in our modern era where everybody carries a computer communications device in their pocket or their purse. When the mouth of hell yawned open all around her, she called her mama. But she never got to say a word. Secret Holt told WKRN, she called me, and all I could hear was voices and chaos in the background. She couldn't say anything, and I tried to call her name over and over and over, and she didn't respond. So we rushed to the high school. And they wouldn't let us get through. Now, I don't know what's wrong with Paul Ryan or Mitch McConnell or Rand Paul or any of the other godforsaken Republicans and Quisling Democrats that they won't do anything because of their bowel-watering fear of the National Rifle Association, America's wealthiest and most powerful domestic terror organization. The power, the terroristic power of the NRA is proven by the fact that so many millionaire members of the federal government live in quaking, abject horror of the NRA, lest they should speak up for the Bailey Nicole Holtz of the world. Of this nation. Because see, in the rest of the world, little Bailey Nicole Holtz get to go to school and get to come home from school, and there aren't 10 or 11 mass murders, shootings inside schools before the month of January is over. When I read that account, though, of her mama screaming, Bailey, Bailey, Bailey Nicole, can you hear me? Say something to me, Bailey, baby. Because I know how mamas talk to their daughters. I know how mamas talk to their children in this part of the world. And it just about made me. It made my blood run cold at the horror of that moment for that mama and the horror that was created for her by a 15-year-old boy with a gun he had no business with in a school where it should never have been, that was legally sold to a person who couldn't keep it out of the hands of a 15-year-old boy who didn't go to school to target Bailey Nicole Holt. He just went to school to kill. And he had one of the most proficient tools that the mind of a human being has ever devised for doing it. But let not the other name not go unmentioned. Preston Ryan Cope, also 15 years old, was gunned down. He played baseball on the Marshall County High School baseball team with Jacob Landis, and Jacob Landis said he's an incredible kid. I mean, every time you saw him, he was smiling, walking down the hallway. He never had anything negative to say. Not that it makes a damn bit of difference, but prosecutors have said they'll charge the 15-year-old boy who remains unidentified by virtue of being a juvenile, they're going to charge him as an adult without divulging the student, the alleged murderer's name. His fellow students have said he was in the band, and he was thought to be a friendly young fella. Trying to understand what a situation like that looks like. And, you know, maybe people who have been in pitched battles have an understanding, who've been in warfare understand. And that in itself is shocking. That in itself is shameful, that the only way to describe what happens in American schools now when these things happen is to ask someone who's been to war to describe that experience. Keaton Gamble is a senior. At Marshall County High School. She said, nobody knew what it was at first, and then you saw the boy with the gun and everybody dropped. Some teachers were pulling kids into rooms, and then they were crawling out the windows of classrooms. A full classroom of kids crawled out a window just trying to get away from the school. Two of her friends were injured. One was shot. The other got a concussion when she was trampled. Meanwhile, Secret Holt and her husband went to the school. They weren't allowed in. And they watched the kids come out. And then they watched them get off the bus when they were bussed over to the elementary school. And they watched and they waited. And Bailey never got off the bus. And then they finally told them the truth. Told them the fact. They haven't established anything resembling a motive. The school's still closed. The kids are still in counseling. The killer was supposed to have made an initial appearance in court today. 2 counts of murder and 12 counts of first-degree assault under the criminal code of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And charging him with it. I don't care how you charge him. Because once again, as is always the case, every time one of these things happen, the people responsible will walk. And that's a fact. And I'm talking, of course, about the NRA. Wayne LaPierre, that check's gonna cash. That check's gonna clear. Just another day. Of all the things that Bob Mueller is investigating, and all the things that I hope he finds, the thing I hope he most is able to establish is this sick, twisted relationship between Russian money and the NRA. Because if parents grieving the loss of their children can't affect any change in this country, maybe proving once and for all the vile degree to which the NRA will go to achieve their blood-sodden political ends, maybe that will begin to wake up a country that is already crying out for relief. That's what I got. That's all I got. And meanwhile, I seem to be having some sort of problem with the computer that we use to bring in phone calls. Of course, because there's always something. Froze up on me and then. But I wanted to make sure that we shared the name of Preston Cope and the story of Bailey Nicole Holt. 15 years old. I saw a photo of her, and it just went through me because she reminds me. She reminds me very much of my granddaughter. And, you know, I live in Appalachia, where people put guns in bassinets. Grandpas buy rifles for newborns. Oh yes. Where 3-year-olds. And 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds have access to single-shot 22 rifles that they use to, you know, not with any animus, not with any mens rea, kill their younger siblings. And it'll give you the chills. So, like I said, I just wanted to make sure that we get that information out there. with the memory of two children we should still have with us. And an observation of gunshot wounds that 12 others shouldn't have. What else? Massive idiocy. Like, for instance, I'm sorry, it's just really kind of hard to move on from that story. And I'm having technical problems on top of it. Never a dull damn moment. Pardon me for a sec here. And that's the phone. If you're wondering why, if you've been calling, and I don't know if you have, if you've been calling and not getting through, that's why. It's that phone. Sorry. Sorry. What else? Yeah. How about? I really do like the work that Carolee Coons does over at Crooks and Liars. And she's got an information dense one at the moment. It was filed yesterday. Here's the headline just to give you an idea of where we'll be going. Feminists need rape. D.C. charter school board official exposed as white supremacist rape advocate. D.C. charter school board official exposed as white supremacist rape advocate. It's the story of John Goldman, who up until yesterday was a senior manager of finance analysis and strategy for the Washington, D.C. Public Charter School Board. Yesterday, however, he was suspended pending investigation. Why? Because photographs emerged of John Goldman attending parties alongside neo-Nazis and white supremacists. John Goldman was operating under a pseudonym. He called himself Jack Murphy. He billed himself as a former liberal who had become a conservative because of Trump. And there was a whole bunch of drama about the about Murphy not liking Richard Spencer and Richard Spencer not liking Murphy and blah, 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 drama, drama, drama. But along the way, Goldman, DBA Murphy, said he was a Democrat with a man crush on Trump. Took some doing, but he did admit that Goldman did admit that his alter ego is Jack Murphy. And as Jack Murphy, he said the following. Again, board member of D.C. Charter Schools. Not board member, but senior manager of finance analysis and strategy for the D.C. Public Charter School Board. Men, he wrote, have a natural tendency towards dominance and women to passivity and submission. For a feminist who has rejected polarity and embraced sameness, this presents a paradox, the cognitive dissonance between her chosen dogma and the urge to get choked during sex is painful. Wonder where he got the details for that. Or did he just, you know, yank them right on out of his ass? One wonders indeed. Continuing to write, he said, I assure you, behind even the most ardent feminist facade is a deep desire to be dominated and even degraded. Really? Anybody, any of the two X chromosome members of the community want to chime in on that? Like I said, I'm having a hard time with Skype over here, so... probably best to do it via email, bobkincaid@gmail.com. After saying, I assure you, behind even the most ardent feminist facade is a deep desire to be dominated and even degraded, he added, or makes as his central premise, as Carolee notes, rape is the best therapy for the problem. Feminists need rape. But not, you know, like in an illegal way. They need to be lovingly raped by a loving man. You know, consensual rape or something. Really, I wish I was kidding. This then dovetails with a little something else. And that is, you know, something that happened yesterday. Dr. Larry Nassar was sentenced yesterday for... sexual abuse of, molestation of seven girls with allegations and accusations of dozens more in conjunction with USA Gymnastics. A judge yesterday told Larry Nassar, it is my honor to sentence you to 175 years in prison. Judge Rosemarie Aquilina said that. Now, for a time, let's remember, USA Gymnastics had threatened to sue members of the USA Gymnastics team, claiming that for them to speak out about abuse that they had suffered at the hands of Dr. Nasser would have constituted a violation of the non-disclosure agreement that these young women had signed in order to pursue their dream of being Olympic gymnasts. These young women gave up their childhoods, particularly in the areas of gymnastics and figure skating. Little girls give up, and the degree to which they can actually consent in and make a meaningful choice in that, as opposed to their parents driving them through it, is debatable. I mean, if you can stomach it, watch the Olympics. 14 years old, 15 years old, 16 years old. Seldom much more than 18 or 19. Man washed up at 20. And God only knows how many of them were sexually abused by Larry Nasser. But USA Gymnastics did try initially before they were shamed into saying, no, it's okay. You can say what Dr. Larry did to you. They were threatened with $100,000 fines for violation of a non-disclosure clause. Imagine a contractual clause like that. One wonders how it could even be legal. I hereby covenant, party of the second part, covenants with the party of the first part, that should the set party of the second part be sexually molested by a physician employed by the party of the first part, the party of the second part will keep her little mouth shut if the party of the second part wants the party of the first part to help her become an Olympic gold medalist. Wow. But USA Gymnastics got shamed out of that position so that young women like Michaela Maroney, Simone Biles, I think is her name, and others came forward and said, yep, did it to me too. Well, you get the idea that Jack Murphy, John Goldman, would have a sympathetic ear for Larry Nasser, because Larry Nasser, at his sentencing, presented a letter to the court and in that letter Larry Nasser wrote the following. You might want to grab the hockey puck for this one. This is revolting. In his letter to the court, Larry Nasser continued to refer to these victims of sexual molestation as patients. He said, those patients that are now speaking out are the same ones that praised and came back over and over. The media convinced them that everything I did was wrong and bad. They feel I broke their trust. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. That ain't the Onion. That's for real. As far as I'm concerned, you could disassemble USA Gymnastics brick by brick by brick and grind the bricks into dust and throw the dust in front of a fan and blow it out into the middle of the goddamned ocean. And it would only be a start. There is not a single Olympic medal worth what these countless dozens of little girls and young women went through to get Olympic gold. Ba, 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 ba. Bullshit. I've despised the Olympics for a long time. In almost every form. But I've long been particularly disturbed by the fact that we refer to, little girls who are 4 years out from their first period performing and being referred to as women. And I hope I'm not sounding patriarchal in saying that. But, you know, how many 15-year-old men's hockey players are there? How many 15-year-old boys are there playing in the men's basketball team in Olympics? How many 15-year-olds are there in the equestrian events? But for some reason, that became a norm. And this monstrosity, I mean, did he have a lawyer? Did the lawyer even read this letter? Did he have a fool for a law, a fool for a client and an idiot for a lawyer? Was he representing himself? Who's, oh my God. You're facing like 20% of a millennium in sentencing time, and you're going to hand Judge Rosemarie Aquilina a letter that says hell hath no fury like a woman scorned when you are charged not with molesting one, nor two, nor three, but seven girls and a small army of other young women say, yeah, did it to me too. Me too. And you're gonna give the court a letter that says hell hath no fury like a woman scorned and say that all these young women who were little girls or girls when it was done to them were just somehow engaged in a giant conspiracy against him? God damn. Reminds me of way, way, way back when in the reign of error when Dim Leader complaining about medical malpractice said, and the women and the gynecologists of our country are not able to practice their love of women. Holy shit. Note coming from Matt in San Francisco. Subject line, this sick fuck. This guy obviously never met my mom or my sister, both feminist, and both would have had this joker taken behind the woodshed and showed him what dominance looks like. Talking about Mr. Jack Murphy / real world John Goldman. Scott and Punky, regarding Larry Nassar, the judge basically ripped him a new one, and he'll need it with a 175-year prison term ahead of him. Once he's all settled in at his new accommodation, someone will need to establish a toe tag countdown clock for him. I have the impression that his stay will not be a lengthy one. Jim says, what did he do? Seriously. Well, look up Larry Nassar, Jim. He sexually molested little girls under the guise of providing them therapy as the official physician for USA Gymnastics. Meanwhile, going back, and I want to share this because Steve put a lot of thought into it. Subject line, our house being cursed. I'm becoming more amused and irritated by the attitude of many self-proclaimed progressive and liberal voices concerning the horrendous situation in which we are. The current president was elected. The entire affair, its imprimatur, is only a fact of history. According with the accepted rules, his legitimacy is not in question, even if one wishes to complain about what a complete boor he is or what an absolute atrocity his residency in the Oval Office has become. The 43rd president of the United States was not even elected to the position, in fact. The 44th occupant of that office, say what you will about his legacy as president, owed as much to the accidental coincidence of sheer numbers present at the polls as to consideration of what his presidency arguably meant in terms of action or history. The current executive in the White House, regardless, showed up at the Davos conference in spite of attitudes or realities or opinions, simply in spite. He strode in, by most accounts, as the monarch that he is, followed by his train, attended by his numerous handlers and servants. Impervious to the pronouncements or reservations of any number of leaders of any note or political stripe that happened to be present, he spoke even to those who did not attend. Why, really, should we be ashamed of such a fact? It's not as though we have lamented, much less prevented, most of any importance that has cursed us up to the present time. Look, there's no getting around the legality or the constitutionality of his installation as president. By operation of a nasty old relic of our slave slave owning enabling past, he, not having won the popular vote, was able to ascend to the presidency. Should this country have done something about the Electoral College a long damn time ago? Yes. But as I noted on this program weeks, if not months back, there is not a single bill introduced as a constitutional amendment in either house of the Congress to repeal the Electoral College. Not one. There's no action to take because there's nothing to take action on. And we won't, you know, okay, so, you know, that was an anomaly. And gosh, there was another anomaly 16 years before. But, I mean, how often are you going to have that kind of an anomaly with a 16-year gap between the two? Well, it turns out too damned often for our own damn good. No, he's president. He's a boor. He's a pig. He is arguably a scumbag. He appears to be as crooked as a dog's hind leg on that day when he dies of natural causes. They will have to screw him into the dirt because he'll be too crooked to bury laying down. But Steve is right in that regard. He is in many ways a natural outgrowth of what the United States of America is. A healthy republic would never have allowed him to become president. A republic that was jealous of its constitutional freedoms would never have allowed him to become president. A country that took campaign finance laws seriously would never have allowed him to become president, because all the Russian money would have stopped at the water's edge, as if it had hit some sort of big old, I don't know, wall. Yeah, amazing, isn't it? But none of that worked. Steve continues and asks, how many beer-swilling louts only watch the Olympics for a chance to drool over a little girl's crotch? I've known or overheard more than a few rating the gap. We don't have any bars left here in my little corner of the world. And I find that just really revolting. But I suppose it's probably true. We're that gross. We're that sick in this country. You know, the other night it was last night, prayer meeting. We had that one preacher who said that the shape of water violates Leviticus 20:15, that says you ain't supposed to be having sex. That says thou shalt not have sex at time with the barnyard animals. And I observed that, you know, you don't just put a proscription on that if nobody's doing it. You generally only make things illegal that people have already done and that society or culture finds repugnant. We have laws against child pornography precisely because there are people, and I don't, the word enjoy is bleh, but we have people who like child pornography. And we have laws against sexual molestation of children because there are people who sexually molest children. These might seem like obvious statements, but they bear examination. We have laws against rape because men rape. Oh, and speaking of rape, Mr. Goldman / Murphy, women need raped, he says, but there's rape and there's rape. Writing at Medium last year, Jack Murphy said, however, the tragedy of a young girl getting raped in the bathroom at school just might be what turns the attention of limousine liberals from the brainwashing narrative of the Democrats and towards a more sane approach to immigration. Let's just hope it'll only take one and not an epidemic of heinous crime to finally get those suburban soccer moms out of their denial and into the real world. He was fulminating on the idea that that sanctuary cities, it just turn into a haven of rapists. Interesting, no? Disgusting. Yes. So women need raped. They just need not to be raped by Hondurans. Ecce Trumpanzee. And once again, bear in mind, this man is allowed to be around children in the charter schools of the District of Columbia. What's interesting is that you'll find a right-wing turd like this writing something about this, like rape. But when you consider, say, the shooting at Marshall County High School, let's just hope it'll only take one and not an epidemic of heinous crimes to finally get those suburban soccer moms out of their denial and into the real world. Well, you know what? Those suburban soccer moms and dads are out of their denial, and they are out in the real world, and in excess of 80% of the American people want something done about the goddamned NRA and their goddamned gun culture and the goddamnable epidemic of children being murdered because they tried to go to school and learn. But you'll never catch one of these maggots saying that in regard to school massacres at school. Just the tragedy of a young girl getting raped in the bathroom at school. See how it works? Yeah. Rhonda, writing from Virginia, says, years ago, I was on the board of directors of a rape and suicide prevention center. We were thoroughly trained as volunteers and worked suicide phone lines. Rape is an act of violence, not sex. They made us watch a video where they interviewed the most notorious serial rapists. They did not have feelings about it, and it didn't matter to them who the victim was. This is a horrible subject, Rhonda says, but important that you brought it up. It has to be talked about. The idea that something like this, this Goldman story, was, you know, right under the noses of parents sending their children to charter schools in D.C. is, again, terrifying. What do you do about that? This guy has a degree in economics, the website claims. A degree in economics from the economics department at George Mason University, which, incidentally, Carole Kunz points out, is broadly and deeply funded by the Koch brothers. He claims a master's degree from Georgetown University. And before he got a job with the board of the D.C. Charter Schools, Carole Kunz points out, he worked with two charter schools hands-on with women in a district more than 60% black and Hispanic. This is also a guy who takes photographs of himself wearing tactical vests with grenades and a pistol on it while holding a semi-automatic military-style rifle. And he's only suspended, not fired. How about that? Computer problems persist. So that's why you're not getting through on the phones. Note coming in from Well, okay, let's deal with this. Jim says, I feel about football in the manner you feel about the Olympics. Both need closer scrutiny. I despise the former and love the latter. Well, I think there are several distinctions to be made, but I imagine that eventually football will probably, I don't know, you know, capitalism being capitalism, head injuries be damned. This country will tolerate a lot. We're finding out now that the latest in the head injury thing from the NFL or from football examinations is that kids don't even have to get a concussion in order for CTE, the CTE process to begin. Just a few good hits here and there that don't even reach into concussion level. But we don't ask we don't allow 15-year-old boys to be professional football players yet. We do little girls with gymnastics and figure skating. And you know, the road to tennis is similar. And you can make one of those thus has it always been arguments because the Olympics of ancient Greece were every bit as corrupt with princes and despots supporting various and sundry athletes in order to gain prestige. There's always going to be some wealthy person who wants to ride the back of some talented person. I wonder how many people of actual talent have been ridden, for instance, by Donald J. Trump. Exactly. Listening to the story of Goldman Murphy, Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana, asks, how many school shootings will it take for conservatives to join the real world? Well, there's been 11 so far this month, and they're still out there in their fantasy world where you gotta sacrifice children as the natural manure to the tree of democracy so that pasty-faced, paranoid, doughy, right-wing Republican voters can feel safe. So we've got that in the way of, you know, data. Oh, and since we're talking about Murphy Goldman and Dr. Nasser, Let's run out to Missouri for a minute, shall we? And a fella by the name of Courtland Sykes. Courtland Sykes has decided that the people of Missouri need to have him, Courtland Sykes, as their senator. He is, of course, a good, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian Republican. But in addition to all of that, he's also a jerk. Or maybe not in addition to, but ancillary to. And so he's declared his candidacy for the Republican primary for the Senate seat presently occupied by Claire McCaskill, who I understand is really, really, really seriously lacking in ideological purity. But by way of introducing himself and establishing his Republican bona fides, he published a bit of a rant. Wasn't even new. I mean, he owns up to having had it for a very long time. In light of recent questions regarding my views on women's rights, attached is my full statement from September 2017. So he's been apparently planning this for a bit. Oh, yeah. Courtland Sykes, U.S. Senate candidate for Missouri. FAQ issues. Yeah, this is a real doozy. Might want the hockey puck for this one, too. He says, well, Chanel, my fiancé. Oh, really? His name's Courtland. Her name's Chanel. Probably got a puppy named Beamer. A cat named Maserati. He says, well, Chanel, my fiance has given me orders to favor them, so I'd better. Do you favor women's rights? Well, Chanel, my fiance has given me orders to favor them, so I'd better. But Chanel knows that my obedience comes with a small price that she loves to pay anyway. I want to come home to a home-cooked dinner at 6 every night, one that she fixes and one that I expect one day to have daughters learn to fix after they become traditional homemakers and family wives. Think Norman Rockwell here and Gloria Steinem be damned. Funny, it sounds a little bit more like the Stepford Wives, but you know, who the hell am I? I don't buy into radical feminism's crazed definition of modern womanhood, and I never did. They don't own that definition, and never did. They made it up to suit their own nasty... I mean, okay, so wait a minute. A guy writes like this, he's got issues. I don't know if Mama potty trained him at gunpoint or you know, weaned him off the nipple and the bottle too early, or maybe Daddy just never took him into the shower and waved his winky at him like Dr. Dobson wants men to do. They made it up to suit their own nasty snake-filled heads. Whew, what a winner! Modern women can be anything they want, including traditional women, as millions and millions more are fast becoming. Millions and millions are fast becoming what? Traditional women? What's a traditional woman? Again, I'll reach out to the double X chromosome members of this family community congregation and ask for a working definition of traditional women, because, I mean, I know what he means, but traditional has, within the context of the anthropological understanding of humanity, something on the order of about, you know, there's about 100,000 years worth of tradition. About 5,000 or 6,000 years worth of sedentary agricultural tradition. Millennial women voters despised Hillary and cost her the election, and they weren't Russian. I wonder why they despise her. One reason is they look at her personal life's wreckage and didn't want to become like her. Well, yeah, her her personal life's wreckage, you know, becoming a Secretary of State, leading a campaign and an effort to challenge racism in schools in the South. Being high-powered lawyer and all of that stuff. Wreckage, I tell you. You know, if there was any wreckage to her life, it probably, the most part of it came from the 25-year-long assault on her very existence that was mounted and funded by various and sundry right-wing millionaires and billionaires, and that's a fact. There are legitimate critiques of her decisions and policies, but the overarching reality is that America was taught to despise her. If, as this misogynistic freak, Cortland Sykes, suggests millennial women despise her, it is because they and their mamas and their daddies were taught to despise her by a steady volume of filth flowing out of the sewer that is Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and Hannity and Bill O'Reilly. Yeah. Because I was around for all of it. From the very moment that the right wing became aware of her and Bill, for some reason or another, their animus was focused on her. It's almost as though the great cleanest hunt of the 1990s was merely a means to an end to destroy her. I don't know her. I don't know if I'd want to sit down and have a cold beer with her. Hell, I don't drink anymore. But have a warm cup of coffee or Skittles. Who knows? But then again, I don't much care about that as a metric for someone who would be competent to be the president of the United States. And, you know, spare me the neoliberal bullshit and the, because half to 80% of the people who use that word don't know what it means. And spare me about 90% of the objections. Anybody who wants to be president of the United States is gonna do some amount of disagreeable shit just by virtue of the fact of being president, because part of the job requirement is putting up with and tolerating and sometimes agreeing with disagreeable shit. I seem to have strayed from Cortland Sykes. My apologies. Anyway. Millennial women voters despised Hillary and cost her the election, and they weren't Russians. I wonder why they despise her. One reason is they look at her personal life's wreckage and didn't want to become like her. And I don't buy the nonstop feminization campaign against manhood. Oh, we will all soon just be running around in little tutus and Jesus. Men and women are different, and gender-bending word games by a goofy nest of drugstore academics aren't going to change anything except the fantasy life of those confused people in ivory towers. Drugstore academics? Does this 200-proof fuckwit even begin to know what goes into obtaining a Ph.D. in any damn thing? Drugstore academics. Courtland Sykes couldn't get through a PhD program if he had a phalanx of PhDs leading him through it and writing his dissertation. I want daughters to have their own intelligence. No, apparently you don't. Well, okay, intelligence. Courtland Sykes wants them to have the intelligence to fix a meal for their man to come home and eat at 6 p.m. and then get about the business of putting them to their natural biological use. That's how they talk, you know. I want daughters to have their own intelligence, their own dignity, their own workspace, the kitchen, and their own degrees. I want them to build home-based enterprises and live in homes shared with good husbands, and I don't want them to grow up into career-obsessed banshees who forego home life and children and the happiness of family to become nail-biting, manophobic, hell-bent feminist she-devils who shriek from the tops of 1,000-tall buildings that they think are they could have... He wrote it that way. Leaped over in a single bound, had men not suppressing them. It's just nuts. It always was. No word on what he thinks his grammatical skills are. I support women's rights, and, you know, anytime a white winger writes that, you know that it will be followed by the word but, and this is no different. I support women's rights, but not the kind that has oppressed natural womanhood for 5 long decades. First it was traditional, now it's natural. So if a woman has a talent for leadership, an organization, and could put that to use to make herself, you know, $100,000, $200,000, $250,000 a year, that's not natural. It's unnatural for a woman to be out in the world. What the hell is the difference between this goddamn freak and some asshole in Saudi Arabia who says that his wife can't go out to do her grocery shopping without 3 male cousins accompanying her and doing the driving? Well, the commas weren't there, Arthur. Arthur says you could editorially add some commas in there, Bob. It hurts us. Hurts as you. It damn near kills me. I mean, we know I have an unhealthy fascination with the art of word knowing. The kind that has oppressed natural womanhood for 5 long decades, the kind of wrong-headed women's rights that allows mean-spirited radical feminists. You got to wonder what some woman with her own opinions once did to Courtland Sykes. Mean-spirited radical allows mean-spirited radical feminists, lots of hyphens there, to use political correctness and their little broom label of sexist. Broom, really? We're going to go to brooms? Why haven't we had a castration reference yet? To define womanhood and women's rights for me. Well, okay, there was a reference to feminization earlier, so I guess that probably it falls into the castrating she-devil. And there was a reference to she-devil, so yeah, I think he's got that base covered. We'll give him that. Broom label of sexist to define womanhood and women's rights for me, for my family, for you and your family, or for my country and the world. But good news, they're finished. Ask Hillary. Someone should have stood up and faced them off years ago. Faced them off? I got a feeling that I don't want to look that up on the Urban Dictionary. You also don't want to see Courtland Sykes' Facebook photo. You don't. You don't. He kind of reminds you of a guy who badly wants to be Fabio with a haircut. Stay off roller coasters, motherfucker. Michael in Madison writing in, The Drugstore Academics. Great band name. Well, yeah, it is. It kind of, yes. They could open for the Cowboy Junkies. He wrote that in September 7, 2017, after watching hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of women march all over the world in the first Women's March. And he dares to say,
what is it?
They're finished. Meanwhile, Scott and Punky noting, it sounds like this poor bastard is in dire need of getting laid. I don't want to go down that road, but sounds like he and old Goldman Murphy there could probably have a high old time over a six pack of Pabst Blue Ribbon Tall Boys. Wowzer. Marty pointing out, and I think this got a jingle. This one's worth a jingle. It's a future Al Bundy. Either that or one of those people who'd read The Handmaid's Tale and thought it was a blueprint. Oh, the good old days to come. Yeah, exactly. So much crazy, so much stupid, so much tragic, so much sad. Uh, 27 minutes before the hour, and just a gentle reminder, we jumped right out there thanks to Charlene and John and knocked down $110 of Chris's challenge to end fundraising for the month of January. We got 90 bucks to go. Please don't leave this challenge laying on the table. $5, $10, we can knock it out pretty quick. And thanks to Glenn, too. Thank you very kindly, all of you. And by the way, just until we get the domain issue sorted out, the PayPal interface is over at headon.live, headon.live. From time to time, I like to bring issues to the table that might not otherwise get mentioned. And I haven't heard much about this in this computer's going freaking nuts on me. That's a pity, because it's been absolutely foolproof. I hadn't heard of this before, but there aren't many places in this country and our neighbors that at some point in time are not going to be subjected to the hells of the hydrocarbon extraction business. This story begins in 2013 when Mexico deregulated its energy business for the first time in 75 years and opened up Mexico to rapine and plunder as perpetrated by global hydrocarbon interests. In the Mexican state of Sonora, the Yaqui people, who've only been living there for 5,000-10,000 years or so, are standing up and hollering hell no about a pipeline. Pipelines everywhere. Hey, thank you, Ralphs. Thank you very, very kindly. That's $65 to go on the challenge. Thank you so very much. Sonora State in Mexico, where there's an 84-kilometer stretch of a natural gas pipeline. It's called the Agua Prieta Pipeline. It begins, where else, in Arizona, and travels 833 kilometers to Agua Prieta in the northeastern corner of Sonora. And along the way, it cuts through Yaqui lands. The planned route for the pipeline also crosses the Yaqui River. This is the primary source of the Yaqui people's access to clean water. And the Yaqui people know they're going to get ripped off. Francisca Vasquez Molina, a Yaqui from the Loma de Bacum community, says the gas pipeline doesn't help us. It only benefits businessmen, factory owners, but not the Yaqui. And if that thing goes under the Yaqui River and something goes wrong, and something will go wrong, because understand, the first pipelines leak, pipelines rupture, pipelines burst, pipelines blow up. And what happens in the aftermath is not good. It is anticipated that in addition to the general environmental destruction that will follow in the wake with the construction of this pipeline, the natural gas itself, which is unnaturally high in methane, has potential for even greater disaster. Rodrigo Gonzalez has spoken to the issue. He says that if there's a gas explosion, all human, plant, and animal life within a 1 kilometer radius surrounding the explosion will be lost. And by lost, we euphemistically mean killed. If there's an explosion, people are 2 to 3 kilometers out. Animals that are 2 to 3 kilometers out will be burned in the second and third degree. Now, bear in mind that in Loma de Bacum, it runs 700 meters from people's homes. In Estación Oroz, it's 591 meters from an elementary school. Of course, it's not the elementary school where any of the executives behind the pipeline send their kids. No, Trip and Biff and Muffy. Well, they go to schools where they wear blue blazers, and the girls wear tartan plaid skirts, and the blazers have little school crests on the jacket pocket. And the boys wear repties. Not a little elementary school in a place like Estación Oroz, where being 591 meters from the pipeline, every child, when the pipeline blows up, will, not may, will die. Every teacher, every child, every maintenance worker, every support worker, the principal, dead. As it seems to be always the case, there was an alternate route for the pipeline to take that wouldn't even have gotten anywhere near Yaqui territory. The corporation rejected this because of costs, because the cost of blowing up children in a school are not as high as the costs of a couple of more, 4 or 5 or 10 or 15 more kilometers of toxic explosive pipeline. Rodrigo Gonzalez went on and said, at the beginning of the project, two routes were mooted. That which didn't cross indigenous territory cost 400 million pesos, whilst that which puts Yaqui lives at risk costs 100 million pesos. That means killing Yaqui is worth 300 million pesos. Or that Yaqui are not worth 300 million pesos. Or that Yaqui lives are measured at negative 300 million pesos. IE Nova is the pipeline company. They say, oh no, we're going to take all due safety procedures. Well, what safety procedures are due? The ones that we think are due. What if they're overdue? Hey, thanks very kindly to Laborman. Laborman says, getting closer. Yes, indeed. We are $15 from meeting Chris's challenge and ending fundraising for the month of January. Thank you, Laborman, very kindly. The group Solidaridad Tribu Yaqui said, this is a people that say no to a mega project of death, dispossession, and destruction. These rich men don't care about the life of one, two, or three people, much less if they are indigenous. They don't care if the Yaqui culture is exterminated. What is important to these rich men is to conclude the work and pocket all the profits to be brought about by the appropriation of the Yaqui territory. Here's the sadness. Here's the tragedy. And this so often happens with these sorts of situations. All the community could not come together and speak with one voice. Eight Yaqui communities were consulted, and only the one at Loma de Bacum refused consent for the project. The other seven communities took the payoff. Lord, ain't I familiar with that.
Oh, that's all right if they won't blow up that mountain across the road, because we're going to have us some jobs.
And so the Yaqui of Loma de Bacum press on in their resistance against IE Nova. IE Nova has behaved as they always do and have accused the Yaqui of sabotage and vandalism. Like I said, as they always do. But God, they're brave. One community member said, if you want to have us killed, there's no problem. We're not scared of that. We're not scared of this company nor this project. All the Yaqui tribe is asking for is that the law is upheld and that federal and state government respect it. If you want to have us killed, go ahead. There's no problem, but we'll defend our land. And that is our right. And you know what? It's paying off. At least one judge has ruled that the company does not have the right to enter Yaqui land to repair the pipeline. Guadalupe Flores said, if they want to build a pipeline, that's fine, but it will not pass through here. That is what courage looks like. It's what it sounds like. And you know what? In the age and the era in which we live, that is where the inspiration is to be found. Like I said the other night in a little girl's poster at the Women's March this past weekend that said, "If you build a wall, my generation will tear it down." Or in the Yaqui, who historically were known to the Spanish colonizers as some of the most fearsome, fierce defenders of their land that the Spaniards had ever known. Hell, the Mexica were afraid of the Yaqui. There are lessons to be learned. Breaking news. As of a few minutes ago. Hey, thanks very kindly, Steve from Georgistan. We are done with January. We're done. Chris's challenge has been met. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. One and all. What a beautiful time it's going to be for these next four programs just to not be able to do anything except thank our subscribers. It's going to be awesome. Thank you. This is kind of, and naturally it will be derided as fake news, definitely fake news. But the New York Times has it, CNN has it. Back in June, Donald Trump had made up what is remaining of his mind, the parts that the spirochetes have not consumed, to fire Bob Mueller. My God, if Bob Mueller was that far under his skin in June, he's into his kidneys by now. Four people aware of the situation told the New York Times. Michael Schmidt is and Maggie Haberman reporting on it. He tried to fire Mueller, and he only backed down when the White House counsel said, "Cool, I quit. You find some other schmuck to do this, because I ain't going up the river for you, Don." Schmidt and Haberman write, "The West Wing confrontation marks the first time Mr. Trump is known to have tried to fire the special counsel. Mr. Mueller learned about the episode in recent months as his investigators interviewed current and former senior White House officials in his inquiry into whether the president obstructed justice. Amid the first wave of news media reports that Mr. Mueller was examining a possible obstruction case, the president began to argue that Mr. Mueller had three conflicts of interest that disqualified him from overseeing the investigation," two of the people said. "First, he claimed that a dispute years ago over fees at Trump National Golf Club in Sterling, Virginia, had prompted Mr. Mueller, the FBI director at the time, to resign his membership. The president also said Mr. Mueller could not be impartial because he had most recently worked for the law firm that previously represented the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Finally, the spirochetes said Mr. Mueller had been interviewed to return as FBI director the day before he was appointed special counsel in May." And so, eventually, when Dirty Donnie said, "Oh, you wouldn't fire him, he's fired, he's definitely fired. Believe me, I'm going to fire him." Don McGahn, Donald F. McGahn II, White House counsel, looked Trump in the eye and said, "I will not ask the Justice Department to fire him. Instead, I'll quit." Once again, as is always the case, this is anonymously sourced, leaving room for, you know, professional liars like Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags to say, "Fake news, my boss says it's fake.
My boss says it's fake news, and I'll help.
McGahn went so far as to tell Trump this will be a disaster for your presidency. When asked about the issue, Ty Cobb, who is liaising, if that's a word, with Mueller's office, said, "We declined to comment out of respect for the office of the special counsel and its process." One gets the sense that there really is quite a lot of fat in the fire. And it explains so much of what's going on right now. Consider the secret society business. Consider all the hoopla over the bullshit memo that Devin Nunes claims to have written. And the Russian bots that went wild on Twitter with the hashtag release the memo. And yes, they were Russian bots. These things exist for one reason. Donald Trump is nearing defining moment. He volunteered without even being asked to be put under oath for an examination by Robert Mueller because he's so goddamn dumb he didn't realize that, as we discussed, under 18 U.S. Code 10001, you can be indicted for lying to the FBI without being under oath. Was Hillary under oath? I'll definitely get under oath. Hillary wasn't under oath, but I'll get under oath. He did that. He did that. And so the Trumpanzees and the maggots in the Congress know that if they impeach him, they're done. We had this conversation months ago. And they're not just going to lose at the ballot box. These frenzied to a point of political violence maggots will threaten their lives. Look at the power that Trump had over one weak-minded 19-year-old in, what is it, Novi? Do you pronounce it Novi, N-O-V-I, Novi, Michigan? Got on the phone and started harassing an Islamic center in CNN and screaming the N-word and hollering about the Jews. Because of the constant litany of fake news that spews out of the gob of Marcus Aurelius. And so the secret society stuff and the memo and the, but they sent text messages, all of that crap is damage control. It is designed specifically for the purpose of providing some sort of a thin reed upon which to hang this Congress's, this House's refusal to indict Donald Trump when evidence sufficient, impeach, not indict, to impeach Donald Trump when evidence sufficient, politically sufficient, not legally or criminally, but politically, constitutionally sufficient for impeachment, is presented to them by Robert Mueller. And gone are the days when there were Republicans who would march up to the White House and say, "It's over. He won't get through this." Because this House and this Senate are controlled by men for whom politics and power are orders of magnitude more important than any sham oath they ever gave to the Constitution. Meanwhile, Cobb and McGann and company keep having to pat little Donnie Dimwit on the head and say, well, Mueller will be done soon. He'll be done soon. It'll be over soon. It'll be over by Halloween. Okay, it's not over. It'll be over by Thanksgiving. Okay, Christmas. It'll be over by Christmas. It'll be over by New Year. No, okay. It'll be over by Groundhog Day. And it keeps not ending. And the steady drip, drip, drip of corruption continues to sound its booming echo as it falls into the sink. But when the day comes that evidence is presented, don't be surprised when this gang of thugs refuses to do their constitutional duty. The only way we have of seeing the Constitution upheld is by ridding ourselves at the polls of those who will not uphold it. And that means we're going to have unity and turnout at a level this country has probably never seen. We will have to overwhelm the polls just to get a little bit ahead of a system that has been, from voter suppression to gerrymandering, rigged in favor of those who refuse to support the Constitution. And so that's it for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. My apologies for the technical difficulties. I guess I'm going to get on that right out of the gate as soon as the program's over. Thank you, one and all. Thank you, all of you, who share your precious finite time engaging in and with the program. Thank you to each and every one of you who each and every month make sure that this program stays on the air. Your grit and determination is an inspiration for which words are insufficient. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.